This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Suter plays it into space right wing at center. And there were no teammates there, and Van Hutton fires it ahead for Olofsson. Left wing for Dorofeev into the Vancouver zone. Shoots, he scores! A hard wrist shot from Pavel Dorofeev at the top of the left circle. Beats Nikita Tolopilo. And Vegas takes a 2-1 lead, 7:59 into the third. Howden's back to him. He'll carry right point. Over to the left side for Van Hutton. Long wrist shot, tip, they score! Jack Eichel knocked it in. And multiple officials say that this was low. It looked like a high stick to me in real time. But it looks like the call on the ice will be that this is a good goal, and it's 3-1 Vegas with 9:15 left in the third.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Passes to center, tipped ahead by Hironic, broken up by Shane Theodore. Got it to Schwint, right wing at center, shoots and scores into the empty net. And that's the first career NHL goal for Cole Schwint. He ices this one for the Golden Knights. It's 4-1 Vegas with 92 seconds left in the game.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks. Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's over. The 2024-2025 Canucks campaign has come to an end. Game 82 is in the books, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah, Bick Nizar will bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in a moment. Canucks lose 4-1 on home ice in the final game of the season. And I wouldn't say it's a fitting end because it's a loss, but it's an end to a home schedule as well that has been filled with disappointing moments. And this game doesn't matter. Whether they won, whether they lost, they weren't moving up, they weren't moving down in the standings, nothing mattered in this night. But in some ways, it did mirror a lot of what we've seen at Rogers Arena, where the home team has been second best on far too many occasions.
For sure, and you know, Vegas wasn't a full strength team as well, so you got to take that with a, hey, they're not loaded right now with Mark Stone and some of the other players that they're missing, but that first period, they played well. They played solid. You know, you got that first goal of the game, shots were equal, guys, high dangers were in Vancouver's favor. But similar to that game that Vegas played here not too long ago, when they want to turn it up, Vancouver can cope with that. And for the first period, they had 8 shots on goal. For the rest of the way here, if I'm not mistaken, they had another 8 shots through 40 minutes of hockey or thereabouts. And that was really the thing. Vegas just leaned on them, really kind of sucked the life out of the game after they ended up scoring a couple of goals. And Vancouver, unfortunately, just could not create. So to me, that's more of also, it also tells you about this team and where they need to go when it comes to offensive talent, right? Like, they just don't have the horses right now. Part of that's injury. Part of that's also high-end talent.
As we're chatting about in the second intermission, that's when that tilt started to happen for Vegas, and they were able to lock things up. It wasn't even just tenacious forecheck and slowing things down. It was, how do we slow you down through the neutral zone? And it's a lot of 6'1", 200-plus bodies, and you're trying to generate speed, and you kind of bump into a wall. You're not going very fast after that, and puck retrievals became an issue all of a sudden, and all these things start to layer up, and you know, Vegas can play a heavy game, and they made it look easy as well through the neutral zone. You think the Dorofeev goal, it's just quick up, quick touch for an entry, and he's coming in with speed hitting the line. Like, they were able to have success through the neutral zone like they did that other game that you mentioned.
For sure, and I think the opening 20 minutes, good for Vancouver to force the issue, but it also woke up Vegas. I felt like this was a Vegas team that came into this game saying, hey, you know, we're not going to go 100, you know, miles per hour here, but when the team in front of you is playing a game where they're bringing it, Vegas responded in the second period saying, all right, if you want to play that game, we can play that game as well. And we saw a little bit chippier, we saw a little nastier through the neutral zone, as you're saying, Bick. And just beyond that, I thought you could see Vegas lean in a little bit more, and Vancouver just couldn't compete with that.
No, they couldn't. And, you know, it's also, I wouldn't say, I mean, maybe funny in some ways, but this game also ends with a key player leaving due to injury. Kevin Lankinen left after the second period, did not return to the game. The team says it's a muscle injury. Does it matter in the big picture? Hopefully it's minor and it's nothing big and he's going to be fine. But the hope was going to the offseason with some good confidence. His last three starts were really good, right? He had a .930 save percentage heading into tonight's game, and he was spectacular through 40. Allowed the one goal, but played really well. And now he has heads into the season with some sort of an ailment. It's not what you wanted. Again, hopefully it's minor. It's nothing too bad. But it's just one of these things where a season that was riddled by injuries and drama and issues – here's the final game and the final period was without a goaltender who really emerged as a key player for this team this season.
Yeah, if you had to sum up, you know, kind of what the Canucks season has been in terms of luck, it's part of it's, you know, what this season has been is a mix of things, and injury troubles and injury luck is a part of that. Obviously, there's a bunch of other things that we can get into, and I'm sure we have all of the offseason to discuss, but injuries have been a part of that. So, yeah, this was unfortunate. Kevin Lankinen was looking sharp. He made some great saves on Howden, Dorofeev, you know, in tight, just looking on, like, looking alert, looking solid. But hopefully we learn a little bit more about this injury tonight in the post-game availability. And then also Friday, it looks like, when the players talk to media, hopefully a good sign will be Kevin Lankinen's there and he's looking all right. If he's there and looking all right, you know, that's what you can hope for, because, guys, you're right. Thatcher Demko is the player that you keep an eye on to say, hopefully he's got his off-season program. Rick Tocchet's already mentioned that he's got his weeks planned out. He's ready to go. They shut him down because they wanted to err on the side of caution and make sure he's healthy heading into the offseason. You want your other guy to be ready to go as well, and hopefully this is a minor thing.
The only type of luck they've had this season is bad luck, or Canuck luck, if you want to put it. It's just a damper on an end to a season there, and it's been the story of the season. Guys out of the lineup and just unfortunate hiccups throughout the course of the season. And, again, you know, the way Randeep stated there is, like, we'll see it on Friday. And we'll see it. We'll see what Rick Tocchet has to say. But you hope it doesn't put a cloud on what would hope to be an exciting opportunity for Kevin Lankinen as they hand out the jerseys off the back. Brock Besser just got unveiled by one of the fans, so a huge ovation in the arena. But you want Kevin Lankinen to be able to take the summer hopefully perfectly in stride, because he's got a big opportunity here to build his body to prepare himself for the most consistent stretch of games he's going to have to play next season.
Well, guys, it's also this too, right, where you have a player. Kevin Lankinen's going to feature importantly in one way or the other, whether it's if Thatcher Demko's not 100% right and you have to kind of, you know, be a little bit careful with him, then Kevin Lankinen's your bona fide number one.
Yeah.
Or the other side is you've got the best tandem in the league potentially if both of these guys are healthy, right? So either way, he's an important piece.
He is. And, you know, on Demko, we'll talk about this more as the show goes on, and we have let me do the math here. Two and a half months until we
it's
get
not
to
why
July.
We got into sports. I didn't get into sports for math, boys.
But 2.5 months until we get to July 1st.
Okay.
There's a lot of time for us to dissect and talk about a number of different things, but if indeed this was Brock Besser's last game, and, you know, you heard Vic mention his jersey was off his back to a fan, Lankinen right now, and here's some good news, Lankinen is coming onto the ice to take his jersey off his back and give it to a fan, and he has his gear on, so, you know, I'd say that is good news to some extent, like you're talking about, you know, looking at good news for Lankinen, so maybe precautionary more than anything, but that's good to see. But Brock Besser looked emotional at the end of the game, skating out and throwing a couple of t-shirts or towels to the crowd, and we know he's a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve. We've seen him. I mean, we've seen the man grow up here in Vancouver, right? Like, we saw him come up here as a player out of college. He's gone through adversity. He's gone through some real difficult moments in his life. He's grown in Vancouver, and we've seen it all unfold. And this may have been the final game. And he's a guy that you could tell it was going through his mind here, especially after the game.
For sure, after the game, and even before the game, I kind of watching him during the anthems, you could see maybe his eyes getting a little watery potentially, and, you know, wondering, I can't think for him, but obviously he mentioned it, Tyler Myers mentioned it as well. Tyler went through the same thing last year when he didn't have a contract. He wasn't sure if he was going to play for the Vancouver Canucks again.
Yeah.
He ends up getting that deal, but he even admitted that you go through that thought process to say, hey, will I be a Vancouver Canuck? Will I play in this building as a, you know, a player for the home team? Those thoughts go through your mind. With Brock Besser, no doubt. You mentioned it. This is a player that has had to go through the great things in life here, but also some of the most saddest and, you know, some of the down moments in his life in this city, in this arena. And to grow up here, it means more than just putting on a jersey for Brock Besser. And that, I think that's why people love this guy, where nobody in the room ever says anything bad about him, because he's an ultimate team guy.
Yeah.
We've seen him get better. It's just a matter of, are you a fit on the ice or not? I think on a personal level, Brock Besser, you know, a heck of an individual, but the fact of the matter is you have to build a team. But no doubt, this was I think we'll probably hear about it a little bit more. I know Ian McIntyre asked the very pointed question in the scrum today where Brock said, I'll get back to you on Friday. But I would assume that, you know, those questions and that conversation, and when we talk about, you know, Besser and him actually opening up about what Vancouver means to him, we'll probably hear that on Friday.
Yeah, the context of this all is like longest tenured Canuck.
Yep.
Again, popped onto the scene. Huge flash, right? Scored goals, Calder campaign, and all that sort of stuff.
All-Star Game MVP. Yep.
Yeah, and it was such an encouraging start, and especially in a transition phase for the organization, right? You're coming off the Sedins into what is the next era of Canucks hockey going to be like? And he was the start of it. Before we got to Hughes, Pettersson, Demko, and that era, there was going to be Besser, there was going to be Horvat, and that's what the next thing to latch onto was. And so for Canucks fans, it was easy to endear yourself to a player like this because, as you mentioned, like he did all the right things. Got involved with the community, was very likable, all these things. And over the course of time, now 9 seasons, it's just melancholy situation here.
Well, going back to the day one, remember his first game was in Minnesota when his dad read out the lineup. Like, when we think of all the great moments that Brock Besser had, and going back to Nashville last year, that series, and you know, his 4-goal game against Edmonton last year, going back to game one, I don't know how you can beat that, right? For a local kid and now knowing what that means. So if this is the final game for him, if this is it in a Vancouver Canucks uniform, 554 games, 204 goals, I think there's, to your point, he was the first kind of light you know, at the end of the tunnel. And that meant something really important that point in this, the you know, of the organization's history. It was some dark days, and he helped come out of that.
Well, and he also went through, you know, the various stages star players go through, first being, you know, like the savior, so to speak, his rookie season coming up, the hope that he brought, and then, you know, the struggles happened. The doubt came in, and I wouldn't go as far as saying he was a villain, but it got to a point people said it's probably best for you to move off, and he wanted out.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted to touch the contract. And then he came back, had the resurgence season last year, and now it's back to being a fan favorite that everybody loves. And he's kind of come full circle, gone full arc from the best thing for the franchise to one of the things that's most disappointing about the franchise. So when we see a player go through that arc and then succeed again afterwards, I think it creates a different relationship with the fan base as well.
I think it creates relatability, guys. Like, who doesn't have up and downs in their own life, right? On days where you think you're capable of something, other days you're like, man, I can't do anything right. We see athletes, when Sidney Crosby does something, and McDavid do it, we're like, these guys are perfect. These guys are the most complete player, but not everybody can play to that level where some of the guys that are maybe a little bit, you know, a tier or two lower, you're saying you have your peaks and valleys. We can all relate to that, and I think that everybody likes a good comeback. You're absolutely right. We'll see what happens with Besser, though, but, you know, I think either way, if he stays in Vancouver, if they can find a deal, obviously the organization has a price in mind, but one thing's for sure, guys, if he hits the market, he's getting paid. Yeah, I think he's gonna. If he wants to leave Vancouver, he'll be fine. Career-wise, he'll be fine in terms of joining a team because there's gonna be a lot of money available in free agency this year, and there's gonna be a lot of good teams that are looking for top six options.
Yeah, I think there's 2 points here, right? It's understanding the emotion of the situation for a connection from a player to the city and also the fans to the player. But let's be clear, like there's also gonna be a fantastic opportunity for Brock Besser as a hockey player, not as a Vancouver Canuck, to really cash in on what the free agent market could be. And we've chatted, obviously, throughout the course of the season, basically since July 1st last year, that his number could be pretty staggering. And, you know, the reported numbers here in Vancouver seem like they're under $50 million. Serious case to be made that number should be closer to $60 million, if not above. And I'm really interested to see what happens come July 1. And, you know, when you have the type of career he's had through 9 seasons, you mentioned there, Randy, 200-plus goals, it's going to be a favorable player on free agency. And teams want guys that can score goals. It just does his playing style fit to what the Canucks need right now.
Well, also a part of that is I think there's going to be a lot of money available. You guys have talked it on your respective shows as well, but, you know, skill is still a scarcity in this league when we're talking about guys that are capable of scoring 40 goals in a season. Whether we think he can do that year after year is a different question, but he's done it once. He's a guy that's going to give you around 25 to 30 goals, and it's coming at a time that is perfect when it comes to the cap situation where, hey, you know, there's it's going to balloon, right? Yeah. So that's going to give you a little bit more value. So I think for Brock Besser, it's a good time for the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see. If he ends up in a Vancouver jersey and he's able to provide scoring options, that's great. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of suitors if he hits July 1st.
Well, somebody just asked us, why does he not just sign for less here? And I think he's willing to sign for less.
How
the
much
question,
less?
How much less, right? So the Canucks' reported offer was 5 years, $8 million per year, so $40 million. To Bick's point, I'm not sure he's going to get $60 million, but let's just split the difference and say $55
million. Sure.
Well, you're still $15 million off.
Yeah.
You have to get close. If the Canucks get to, say, $48 million, $49 million, now he's talking about maybe leaving a handful of million on the table. That's when players, okay, what's 48 versus 53
sure.
or 52? Okay, but you have to get close to that, right? Like, you can't be at 40 and expect the guy to take $15 million less. It's just not realistic, you know. So I think this is true for a lot of guys. They're willing to take less, but it's going to be a couple million. It's not going to be this, you know, massive discount. It's just not realistic.
Yeah, and I think with, you know, when we're talking about free agency in July 1st, what's that number? I look at it like 8x7, right? Is somebody out there going to give you $56 million? Probably. Right, I know the 60 plus number is the high end. I'm looking a little lower than that to say, is that 8x7 something that's realistic? I think it's realistic.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I personally think it'll probably come in around like 52, 53. Okay. But nonetheless, like, we're talking about a similar
couple million
range
here.
But the point
being, the difference between, yes, you know, the reported offers and the interest from the Canucks, that's still $7 million, guys. That's not nothing, right?
Yeah.
That's a sizable gap. So, you know, he gets his – we'll see how this plays out. I'm intrigued because obviously even the comments this morning, Brock Besser's not shutting the door on that. He said, we'll see what happens. Maybe I don't want to, you know, essentially put a wrap on this.
We've seen that around the league. Like, I remember Philip Forsberg.
Yep.
That final game in Nashville, like, he skated off the ice looking around, kind of soaking it all in. And, you know, here we're in this market. We're like, oh, he'd pair so well with Elias Pettersson. And there was a lot of like, oh, go get Philip Forsberg. And what happened? He signs a massive deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of this stuff can change in the – what was the math there, Sat? Month and a half here?
Or two and a half months.
Two and a half months. 76 days. I looked it up.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
76 days. So almost exactly, actually. You were right on it. Like, a lot can change from now till July 1, but
it wasn't hard to figure out because today's day 16 of April.
But yeah, it's
no calculus majors in this in this broadcast gondola right now.
We're halfway through 1 month, and then 2 other months. Pretty simple. It was easy for us to figure out.
I just considering the team does not have an internal solution to fix their biggest problem.
Yeah, I mean, they don't just have a number one center just hanging around,
yeah,
right?
So
just hanging around.
They're going to have to dedicate resources, whether it's cap space, draft picks, prospects, to figuring that part out first. And as fantastic of a servant he's been to the organization, it puts you in a spot where he kind of becomes a side burner. I don't say back burner, but they have to solve the main problem.
Yeah.
And you can't leapfrog problems right now and say, okay, we got to dedicate $8 million to this right now.
Well, there is a hierarchy in every organization when it comes to the most skilled players. And if, you know, you're looking at your third or fourth most important player, you got to figure out, I think, number one and number two. Quinn Hughes has sorted out. Elias Pettersson is something that, obviously, is he in that two spot? Is he in the three spot? We got to figure that out. But I still think you're missing that third player. To me, Brock is probably the number four or number five on a team, right?
So on a championship team.
On a championship team. Not here right now, but we're talking about projecting out. You need that number two or three piece first locked in. So is that a young center? Is that another speedy winger as well? Mm-hmm. You have to figure that out, no doubt.
Before I let you go, as far as some positive, we've been talking about the negatives, right? The 500 home record, and it's worse than 500, 17, 16, and 8. So they've lost 24 out of the 41 home games, even though 8 have been in the extra frame, right? And we talked about the disappointments and all that. Are there silver linings that you carry over to next year from this season that are tangible, that aren't just magic beans?
Well, the biggest silver lining is obviously Quinn Hughes, but that's the obvious thing in the room, right?
Yeah.
He was able to level up this year, and if you have that player in the building, if you have that player playing at that level, you're going to attract attention on two fronts. People want to play like with players like that. You know, Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, that level of talent, people will go and play with that player. So that's obviously a silver lining. That's the most obvious one. I think there's younger players. That defense is a silver lining. And sure, you took away from the offense to make that defense solid. But if you look out next couple of years, they can work a couple of players maybe off that. That's a surplus, and you can try to add to that forward group. So I think locking in Marcus Pettersson, you have Quinn Hughes, you have Filip Hronek, you have a right-hand side now with Tyler Myers. He fits in a little bit better further down. Guys, that is something that was the biggest question mark in this market for years. of what do you do with this defense? How do you add pieces? How do you add to the right-hand side? That's a positive. I think that defense is going to stay solid for a number of years. And, you know, we'll see what happens with Willander. We'll see what happens with some of these young guys like Elias Pettersson. Mm-hmm. But, of course, with that silver lining, there's the question of the forward group. And that's the big one. It was 2.5 months, 76 days. That's what we're going to be talking about, right? So that silver linings to me is overall your defense. But, of course, that begs questions on the offensive side of things.
No doubt.
Biggest thing for me, again, it's a smaller lining, but that's the silver linings that you look for. It's not even just an NHL thing. It's an organizational thing. It does look like they've got continuity between the AHL and the NHL, that the backfill in situations that they're able to have credible bodies come in. And this is something that this organization has not had for a decade, that you no longer have to go chase to say, hey, we have to go spend $3 million on Jay Beagle and or whatever depth piece is to overspend, because there's a certain belief that we have guys that are progressing through. Very encouraged what Atu Ratu has done here in the second part of the season. Linus Karlsson, Elias Pettersson. Like this, it saves yourself from mistakes in free agency to go chase something to say, hey, we need this guy on the third line or the fourth line, and let's just overpay because we don't have anybody to do it. They find Kiefer Sherwood. They find Pugh Suter. And that level of progression, again, it might take 2 years for some of these guys to come through, but it's working now. And that's something that this organization desperately need to plug a hole on.
And it's kind of the Wilkes-Barre West, right? That whole model that Jim Rutherford had in Pittsburgh where – the Brian Rust of the world, the Connor Sherrys, all those guys, Tom Kunackle, guys that we've forgotten
Jake
about.
Jake Guentzel.
Jake Guentzel was one of those guys where they worked their way up and,
eventually,
right? Like all those guys, right? Whether they had 10 minutes in the league or 10 years, they could fill that role for that moment.
No, you're right. And, you know, like the backfill's there. There's real organizational depth. There's credible depth. And I feel like their defense, solid. Maybe you bring Forbert or somebody like that back for veteran depth leadership or whatever. Down the lineup, maybe you want to add a tough player somewhere, you would. But the only thing this team has to add, but it also happens to be the hardest
thing
to add,
is
the high-end talent.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to be the question. But Randeep, great stuff calling the games this year. Unfortunately, this year we don't have playoff games, but we will still talk to you over the course of the off-season. You're not going anywhere yet. Yeah, you'll be busy, but you'll be
Friday. You're joining me, aren't you?
I'm joining you for a couple hours. So post availability.
Well, you'll see, and you know, you'll obviously be doing a lot of Hockey Night playoff coverage.
That's right, and I want to thank all the listeners as well. Thank you very much for listening to Batch and I, not only on the broadcast but in the booth. We haven't decided, but we'll have at least one more episode before we're done. But thanks to all the listeners wherever you're. We get text messages about Australia and England and India and everything. So. Once again, thanks very much for making our dream jobs even that much better, folks.
Well said. Great as always, Randeep, and we're hoping for 2025, 2026 being better than this past season. That's Randeep Janda, and that was your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Sport with rates from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of reaction, Bick, on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Before we go to the phone boards, let's get a couple of these in. Rick says, they didn't play well for us fans. How can you go out the last game on home ice with a whimper? Maybe shoot the puck. Maybe score a goal. Too soft. That's it for me. Rick is frustrated. And others, you know, Bo from Burnaby says, thank you for a great season. You are a great call and radio host, so we appreciate the kind words and you all listening as well. But obviously a lot of disappointment with how the season has gone.
Yeah, and some comparisons as well to some other success stories across the league. This one, Habs, Flames, Senators, Young Guns paying off after a 3-5 year transition. 650-650. This one, because we don't have our third pick, which RFAs are a viable option for us to go and acquire. Look, that offer sheet conversation is always a big one here, especially with a new precedent being set there in St. Louis and a team willing to go do it there for Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg.
We'll talk more about that in the offseason. Like, we talked about it, too. There aren't as many options as you think.
The entire free agent market isn't that enticing.
No, it's like a guy like Mason McTavish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a bit of a risk, right? Like, you know, there's a couple
we
guys.
We talked about Matthew Nyes a couple
Gabe Vilardi.
Yeah,
he's the one guy you look at maybe, but That's going to be a big number, too. And, yeah, the Canucks have to reacquire their third-round pick first if they want to do a number of those offer sheets. Corey from GP, the last game of the year was a failure like the season. Better come back next year ready to play. No drama and less injuries. That's Corey from GP texting in. All right, let's keep things going. Let's go to the phone boards. Let's start things off in Bella Bella, where our friend Don is on the line. Don, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts on tonight and the season?
Well, hey there. Thanks for taking my call. Long-time Canuck fan. I'm going to be giving the Canucks a pass on this bad season. Like, too many injuries, too many names to list for injuries. I mean, Hronek and Hughes were out at the same time at one point. But now the decor is coming together nicely. They're good on the PK. I think that's a silver lining for next season. If they could get two or three good players for the top six, I think they can bounce back. I know they need centers, but I have one question for you. If Besser doesn't sign, how much cap would the Canucks actually have? Thanks.
Thanks for the phone call. So right now the Canucks, so we've done the math on this, and this includes all the buyouts. It includes the salary retention, and it also includes, let's say, bringing Ratu on the roster, having Lekromäki on the roster, having Mancini and Villander on the roster. They're going to have roughly $13.5 million to spend on two players.
Yeah, and you did mention the buyout. Like, the buyout number for OEL,
goes up this year. All that stuff is being considered. They're going to have $13.5 million. This is not including Besser nor Suter.
Yeah, there's two roster spots
to sign. Now, you could subtract somebody else, but then it becomes like three roster spots and $14.5 million.
Yeah.
So it's like about $1 million for those guys that you're taking off. So $13.5 million for two players you can sign if you don't bring Besser back, right?
Right now they've got 12 forwards signed.
Yeah.
Already locked in.
Yeah, and you're going to sign Ratu.
And you probably need two more bodies to be in prominent roles.
Yeah, you need to. I mean, Besser and Suter have to be replaced.
Yeah.
And that's just replacing those guys.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're hoping internally you have a Ratu type, but yeah, that's the money on the money portion of things. Let's continue on the phone boards, and let's go to Grand Prairie, where we have Travis on the line. Travis, thanks for calling in. Now, what do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. Well, first off, thanks for being like a counselor after some of these games this season. That was a tough season.
Yeah, it was a rough one.
I think for me, the tough part of it was all I want is the Canucks to at least just win one, because living in the heart of oil country, it'd be nice to say, hey, we won one as well. Mm-hmm. But I remember back, so I've been a fan since 82. I've told you guys that. 82 was it was a very surprising run. In 94, we were a good team. Not the best, but we were a good team. And then 95, we took a step back. And then in 2011, we took a step back. Like, we lost first round LA after that. So for me, with the Oilers in game 7, I wanted a rematch in the playoffs, because I thought with a healthy Brock Besser, who was our leading point scorer, and a healthy Demko, I think we could have beat the Oilers. So I was really looking forward to this year. And I had thought the moves they made in the summer made us a better team. Now, we've had numerous general managers change, numerous coaches change, tons of players change. The fans are the same. The only thing that's the same is, we've had lots of fans. The only thing that's the same is the owner. And so I don't understand when these new GMs come in, mistakes they made, it's like they don't do the homework of this franchise and what we've experienced and suffered through. But other than that, total disappointing season. Pretty upset. I stopped watching the games. I even stopped calling you guys. But it's the last game of the year. Thanks again for all your awesome work, and I enjoy your show. I enjoy listening to the fans call in, and I definitely enjoy how you guys respond. So thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, appreciate it very much. Thank you so much for calling in, as always, Travis, and we're hoping for a bit bigger and better things next season, and we all want to see Canucks fans finally get the Stanley Cup, and I'm not sure next year is a year, but can you at least get closer? And we're far off of it this season. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your phone calls, texts, and we'll hear from the Canucks head coach and more Canuck players after the final game of the season, a 4-1 loss on home ice against the Vegas Golden Knights. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Michael right wing into the Vancouver zone, trying to center and pass, blocked by Sherwood, who hit him into the wall. And Howden's back to it. He'll carry right point over to the left side for Van Hutten. Long wrist shot, tip, they score! Jack Eichel knocked it in, and multiple officials say that this was low. It looked like a high stick to me in real time, but it looks like the call on the ice will be that this is a good goal, and it's 3-1 Vegas with 9:15 left in the third.
Point number 94 for Jack Eichel, as he ends up taking a pretty solid hit from Kiefer Sherwood on the zone entry, and then the puck goes towards the point, a wrister coming in and a deflection, and it looks like this is going to be below the crossbar to me, Batch, as the blade of the stick is high, but it's actually on the way down, and I think this will probably be a good goal, but it's pretty close.
It was a good goal. The Golden Knights add another one into an empty net, a 4-1 win over the Vancouver Canucks to end the 2024-2025 Canucks season. A disappointing one. High hopes coming into it. Ends on a low, 90 points on the campaign, far off the pace from where they were last season. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satin Bick on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650. We'll get to your phone calls coming up in a moment. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, Bick. This one, Sea Legs, thank God this is over.
A lot of that.
Adrian says, no. Playoff sucks. I could not agree more, Adrian from Langley. It sucks that there are no playoffs.
Yep.
What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Beck?
650-650. This one, not signing Besser feels like an oversight. Our most valuable player in the playoffs last year, goal scorer and a class act. Wish him well. Also, this one from Aaron in Lake Cowichan. A loss is just a loss, no biggie, but waiting for Hughes to get another point, and it's not happening. As frustrating as waiting for Edler to score 100, and it's not happening. This is a Canuck tradition, I guess. It's Aaron in Lake Cowichan. And, yeah, Garland didn't get his 20th. Yeah. Sherwood didn't get his 20th. Quinn didn't officially set the mark as franchise leader in points. So something to look forward to in game one of next season.
Well, I mean, Quinn will get it. That's not the one. I mean, Sherwood's going to have to score, you know, another 19 goals for another crack at 20. So it's a lot to do there. Tyler says, outside of going to OT, this game perfectly encapsulated the Canucks season. Inability to get shots on net, inability to score, and then lose at home. And Mac and Penticton, too small, too slow, and too few shots. Yet again, the theme for the majority of this season. And yeah, a lot of that sentiment in the text inbox. But some positivities, we saw some, and we'll get to some more of that of your text coming up in a little bit here. But let's go back to the phone boards and start things off in Summerland, where we have our friend Bikram on the line. Bikram, thanks for calling in, bud. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
All right. First of all, thanks for always taking my call. I appreciate the time that you guys offer me, and always enjoy listening to your show, especially on my way to the office in the morning the next day. So
appreciate it.
Thank you. Just on reflection, a couple of things. Number one, I think about the time of the trade where they traded Bo and re-signed JT Miller. Just kind of thinking about that, was that the wrong move? Because things have been done differently. Very curious to get your guys' thoughts. And then number two, you know, the other thing that would be kind of cool, not cool, but it would be good, is that, you know, we'll see what happens with Quinn, but maybe take the same route that the Montreal Canadiens did, where the president and the GM said, look, we're going to do a full tear rebuild. And now look at them. And I think, I wish hopefully the ownership here has some sort of appetite, because I'm sure the fans would be okay with that if we get the results we want. So love to hear your guys' thoughts.
Hey, appreciate the phone call and kind words as always, Bikram. You know, we will have a lot of time to relitigate the whole Horvat-Miller thing. I always think you bet on the player who has more talent, and JT clearly has more talent upside than Bo, and that's how the organization felt. Obviously, in hindsight, it didn't work out, but you still had to move one or both, ultimately, because you had to shift things around to get the defenseman like you had Filip Hronek, right? And I don't think JT's value was at the level for you to get Hronek in the first place, at least where it was that year where they moved Bo, because he was on that heater as well.
Plus, they had already signed JT at that stage.
No, when they traded, yes, they had signed JT in the offseason already, and then they traded Bo because they couldn't come to an agreement with him, right? So I'm okay with them trading Bo. The thing that got me more than anything is you made the commitment to JT when you knew everything that was going on with Pettersson, and you were willing to see it through, and then you weren't willing to see it through after this year. Now, obviously, things happen, and I'm sure things can happen to a point where it's like, okay, we can't make this work anymore. And it's in hindsight, you look back and say, well, if you didn't think it was going to work, why did you come back to it, right? And if you think it's worth it, then why not try to see it through? But clearly, things got so far off the mark this year that you couldn't put the genie back into the bottle. But that's my most disappointing thing here, right? It's like, that's
stole
how they
my
felt.
Phrase.
Right, yeah. But that's the most disappointing thing to me here.
To pair those two timelines that Bickham was just bringing up here, you could have done the, hey, we're restarting when the regime came in.
Yes.
They chose not to.
Yes.
Okay, and there may have been a recognition of Demko, Pettersson, Hughes. Like, we got something here. So we don't need to do this. And they committed to JT fairly quickly in their tenure. Had they gone that route that Bickham was talking about, that they said, we're going to not move just Bo, but also JT, there wouldn't have been a lot of complaints from
no.
the fans, because they would have been in clear direction of what they're trying to do at the start of a tenure for a new management
yes.
team. And it would have made all the sense in the world you could have done it.
And we talked back then and said, I had the same point with you. I said, I'm okay. I'm actually open to trading both.
Yes.
Especially taking a step back and doing it at that point.
If you're forced to a decision on one.
I'm keeping JT.
We both were.
That's But
yes.
we were both in the records
yes.
there. We said, hey, if you're looking to retool, you move both. That's what you do. But they weren't willing to do that back then.
Yeah. And look, there would have been merit to it given what happened last season.
Yes.
But as you perfectly illustrated, it kind of blew up in their face because
yes.
the scenario and the situation developed as it did.
Yeah.
So you can't, I'll use another phrase, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Yeah.
Right? You chose this route.
Yeah.
You can't now go back and say, hey, Quinn, I know where you're 2 years left in this deal, but we're going to send this letter out and say it's a full rebuild.
Yeah.
That's going to end poorly.
And then the biggest thing, I've mentioned this before, had they signed Pettersson to an 8-year deal when they had the chance, they wouldn't have to try to convince Pettersson to stay and
right.
be aggressive. And had Quinn sign an 8-year deal instead of a 6-year deal, he has 4 years left, and we're not sitting here talking about, hey, you got to convince Quinn to stay. You don't have runway. And, you know, all these things, again, you can play the hindsight game very easily at this stage, right? Let's take one more phone call before we get to the head coach, and it is Victor in North End. Victor, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
All right. So, yes, it was a hard season this year for sure. You know what? Overall, there was a few players that really stuck out this year. Sherwood, obviously, like, he just rocked it. He totally brought the fans up to a whole new level of, like, appreciation of what he does. Laikkanen as well, too. So my memory of this year is totally not on the ice. It's what happened off the ice. I do Uber Eats occasionally, and I happen to drop off some stuff at an apartment, and in the elevator that coming down, I'm not going to say his name because I want to keep it low-key, but was a Canuck player. And I said, hey, good job last night on the game, whatever. And I told him that my 3-year-old boy loves him. He's got a jersey. And so later on that day, I got a text from, I guess, Ticketmaster or whatever, and I got free tickets because he asked for my number. I was like, oh, cool. Unfortunately, it was a game where they ended up losing against Carolina 4-1, but I was like, you know what? That's great. Like, he was such a great player. I'm hopeful for next year. I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of growing pains mm-hmm. and whatnot. And if we have, like, 13.5 million left in cap, hopefully they do something.
Right.
Sucks about Besser going. Sat, I have to say, you and I have probably had the roughest year. Our Browns didn't do good this year.
Man, I know.
and the Canucks. But otherwise, I'm very hopeful for next year. It was yeah, it was a rough season, but I think they'll probably squeeze in, try to get to the wild card spot again, if anything, try to win the division. So thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, Victor, man. Great stuff. Appreciate the phone call. That's some good stuff, Browns fan. Hey, the Browns at least got the second overall pick in the NFL draft with no such luck for the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, hey, they might still win the draft lottery, and they could
yeah.
pick fifth overall. They could move up 10 spots, right? But there's like a 0.5% chance of that happening. So don't hold your breath, but there is a chance, right? But yeah, tough year. But I like the optimism. You know, there has been a lot of pessimism in the text inbox, and Victor says he's optimistic. And a nice little story, too. And good on you, man, doing everything you can. And,
I adhere to the optimism, too, right? 90 points over the course of 82 games is a perfectly average season, okay? Let's just state that.
Well, it's actually, yes. Yeah.
You're not in the playoffs, but it's better than average. It's just like slightly above 500. It's perfectly average. But perfectly average was not okay for the context of this season.
Yeah.
They go to the second round last year, push a Western finalist to seven games. The expectation was that or more coming into this season. So they didn't even make the playoffs. So it's a bad season given the situation.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about rebound potential, like, there's plenty of rebound potential for this team to get back in the playoffs.
And a lot
next
of
year.
It comes back to one guy in particular.
Yeah.
Elias Pettersson. Can they get him back? And does he come back? That's going to be the other part of the offseason discussions as well. All right. We'll get to more of your reaction coming up in a bit here on the text inbox and the phone boards. But let's hear from the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium after a 4-1 loss against the Vegas Golden Knights, the final game of the season.
Rick, just your thoughts on the game as a whole and the finish to the season for your group.
Yeah, it was half decent early in the third. Execution again. But, you know, like I said, last game of the year. I thought the first part was pretty good.
Lankanen left after two periods.
Yeah, he pinched something. He just felt uncomfortable. So, didn't want to risk anything.
It's kind of a weird situation just for these guys. I mean, they know the end is near for a bit and just to see it come to an end.
Yeah, it sucks, right? And we talked about that this morning. But, you got to learn from adversity. You look at a team like Vegas, that's what you strive for. They wear you down, heavy on pucks. You got to win puck battles, things like that. But, use it as motivation, to win in this league, you got to go through pitfalls.
Take me through what the next 48 hours are going to be like for you with player meetings and things like that coming up.
Yeah, the exit meetings are 10, 15 minutes with each guy. I mean, it's more than that down the road. You make phone calls, you go visit guys. That's a whole, but I think it's good for a 15-minute conversation to touch base what's going to happen and, what you want to do in the summers and stuff like that. And that's really it, the process of it.
Rick, 11 months ago in this room, right after, like within 20 minutes of your season ending, you were really quick to spotlight sort of the idea of putting respect back in the jerseys is something you were proud to have accomplished last season. Obviously a different feel this time around, but how do you reflect just as it's ended on sort of what you experienced over the past 7 months?
Yeah, I don't want to really play the what if game. I think you got to reflect on the year, what could you have did different, scenarios, situations. I'm not going to use excuses at all. I know that you guys know this year what's happened, but you got to deal with that stuff. Could we have dealt with it better? Things like that. And that's why you got to take a deep dive. We talked about embracing the hard at the start of the year, and, maybe we weren't ready for it.
Last week of the season for an eliminated team, the pace kind of slows a little bit inevitably, even if, you're still getting professional efforts and you largely did. But then you sort of have in the third period, Kiefer Sherwood still throwing hits.
Yeah.
Looked like he upset Jack Eichel on it, obviously upset Nick Hague. What do you take from that, if anything?
Well, that's what you need, right? You want that kind of attitude. You're right, But, at that point, the microcosm is we have the goalie pulled. We got three guys not moving in the middle of the ice, and that's kind of sometimes what happens. And we got to go through that barrier. You need the Sherwoods and those guys to keep pushing. That's what we need, and that's really what it comes down to. So yeah,
Rick, you've been honest with us about why you wanted to wait until after the season
before
you talked about your contract, and also that you needed to kind of debrief with Patrick and Jim and players. How long do you think the process will take before you know your status for next year?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we'll probably talk about it more in a couple of days, but, there's things that you got to go through the process. There's a lot of different things, right, you got to go through. And, the season just ended. Obviously, you just move along and see where it goes, right? But there's a lot, there's more stuff we got to talk about.
You coached for an extra month last year.
Yeah.
Has this been harder this year?
The season?
Yeah.
Well, it's been, I mean, every season's, You know, I, the one thing is you put your heart and soul in it, right? The coaches, you know, we worked really hard at it, and sometimes when you don't make the playoffs, you got to look at yourself, you know, what could we? That's what we're going to go through, is what we could have done better. Really, that's what I have to look at myself. And then you reflect and you go from there, and then you make changes or positive, you know, reinforcements or whatever you do. You know, I think it's important that we reflect on it.
In a similar note, I mean, you're eliminated, last week, but the last two, 3 weeks have been, you know, sort of on that edge. How challenging has it been for you as a coach in terms of approaching this sort of end of the season that wasn't what you wanted?
Right. It's challenging, but you also, like, there's guys in that room that, you know, 6-7 guys from Abbotsford, the younger guys that you can't show them that you're frustrated and you're, you know, whatever. You gotta keep coaching these guys because, you know, they're the future and their careers, you know, they're impactful. You want to be impactful with them. That's what I was proud of the coaches. We kept on coaching even tonight, you know, like Yogi's got the, you know, a play there. Obviously, we didn't execute it with the goalie pulled. But, you know, you just keep coaching. You got to just keep coaching hard.
And then you bring these young guys up. I mean, you see them in preseason in a sort of NHL context, but this is the NHL context. You know, will you draw out from what you've – I mean, I guess you'll go back and look and see what their games were like, but what will you be looking for in the, you know, in your review of these last few games?
It's a good question. I think the first thing you look for is effort right away. I think that's the easiest one to pinpoint. And then there's digesting a game plan and can they execute it? I think can you retain the information and apply it the next game? Things like that you look for. There's, you know, a lot of guys are really tried out there, and I got to give them a lot of credit, especially down the stretch.
You're usually pretty stoic on the bench, but during Pat O'Neill's celebration at the end, even you had a nice smile on your face. A lot of people think of an equipment manager and, you know, that, but I mean, there's so much more. What did he bring to this club?
Just consistency, just his constant consistency. Whether you lose 5-0, win 5-0, he always brought the same the next day. I call him the godfather of all the trainers. Like, he's one of those guys that you go, any team that comes in, I don't care if it's Ottawa or it's San Jose, he's always got 3 or 4 people coming down to say hi to him because he's been here 40 years and he's done a hell of a job. I think every player will say that he's the same thing. He's constant. He's a great human being. And I don't think he's done in the sense, right? You know, I think he'll still do some stuff. I hope he does some stuff for the Canucks, but I think he's had his time. I think he wants to. Does Patty golf? I don't know if he golfs, but he
You know, one of the things too. I mean, he's one of the guys that reads the room in a way, right? He gets the temperature of the team, and with his experience, obviously, it's going to be tough to replace.
Yeah, him. I feel like those guys, like Stan Wilson, same thing as he was in Arizona and stuff, and Patty, they've been there for years. You wish those guys could win a cup. You know, that Patty's like a guy, you know, wish you could win him a cup. Same thing, a guy like Stan Wilson. You know, those guys are just hard. You know, it hurts when they lose, too. Like, they hurt. Like, everything's about the players. But the trainers, man, they put a lot of hours in, and they're slugging bags, and they're, you know, win or lose, they're always doing the same thing, and they're part of the team. So, yeah, it would be nice. You know, I actually hoped we would have won tonight for Patty, but, you know, it didn't work out that way.
Tyler Myers this morning was the latest Canuck player to gush about the impact that you've had on him. What's it mean to you, the guys like he and Quinn and others have kind of gone to bat and talked about how much you mean to their careers?
Yeah, no, they're terrific guys to coach. You know, I mean, I appreciate it, but, you know, those guys are, you come every day, and, you know, when there's adversity or when things are going good, these guys are, they're the same, right? They work hard. They're low maintenance guys. They want to win. They get frustrated like everybody, but every day they're Patty. They're constant. Every day, Tyler Myers or Quinn Hughes, every day at practice, or they do the same thing. They work hard. So we just got to kind of group a bunch of guys like that and keep moving forward.
As you go through your process in the next couple of days and make a decision, obviously dollar and term matters, but how much does that matter versus the direction of the team and what you hear from Jim and Patrick about potential changes and things that they're going to do to get this righted?
Yeah, it's like anybody. When you analyze stuff, you got to check boxes, right? And I got an unreal relationship with Patrick and Jim. So, you know, you go through the boxes, you know, you check them off. just like no, it's just like a player, free agent. It's no different than trades. It's all that stuff. You got to go through that process. It really is a process. So that's really what it comes down to.
Nils Höglander feels like a player from the beginning of the year to now has gone through a lot of growth.
Yeah.
Tonight, on the one goal you guys score, he's winning the battle in the corner against two players. Can you speak to that growth and what you've seen and how he's found a role, found a way that he can contribute?
Yeah, no, Hoggy, you know, his first half was, you know, had a tough year, right? And I think the last, I think, what, 7 weeks, he's been one of our better guys, right, taking the information. But, you know, it's the same thing with him. You know, he's got to really work on a few things this summer, retention of hockey IQ, things like that. He's got to stay focused. I mean, these are things that when you're 24, 25, to get to the next level, you got to really do that. And I think the Hoggy's got to and we got to help him, don't get me wrong. But the retention of stuff, you know, the hockey IQ, that's the thing he's got to continue to work with. Because you watch him some nights, he's a hell of a player. But then he's got to make sure that he stays focused and things like that. But that's for the year-end exit, and that's where you really got to help a kid like that.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated since 1971. Visit any of their three locations and talk to their in-house design consultants or visit them online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, he gave a lot of praise to Patty O'Neill, who was here for his final game. Great moment. He waving the towel on the bench, too. It was great to see.
Such a fixture.
45 right? years in the league, 38 with the Vancouver, 37 with the Vancouver Canucks.
I've not watched a Canucks game with him not on the bench.
I know. It's unreal.
Right? It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. What a fantastic career. And shout out to the Vegas Golden Knights for coming by, shaking hands too. Obviously, a couple of former Canucks there with Pearson and Hutton leading the way there. But a fantastic moment, and you know, in a season of obviously huge struggles and disappointment, that was a nice moment there at the end, and something I was glad to be here to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the highlights in a tough year. Like it's been a tough year. It's been disappointing, you know. And you know, we talked about this quite a bit. I mean, the Canucks came into the season with expectations of repeating and besting what they did last year, and it's been like two steps back. And with questions about can they even get back to where they were to begin the season next year. So, like, to the point we've
made. Can they even take two steps forward to get back to where they were last year?
So, like, we talk about there's bounce back in this team
mm-hmm.
to be a bubble team. But to be above that, there's some significant work that needs to happen, right? And that's going to be something we talk about over the course of the offseason. Keep your texts coming in. We'll get to more of your texts, more of your phone calls on the other side as well on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Shooter dumps it into the left corner. Höglander on the forecheck. Battles with Nicholas Hague deep in the zone. Got it free to Garland. Left circle, turns and fires it. Stop, rebound. They score! Hughes Suter, parked in front, scores his 25th of the season on the rebound. And the Canucks lead 1-0.
And this is a play that starts in the neutral zone from Hughes Suter. Just a smart backhand dump in, which is angled perfectly for Nils Höglander. And Höglander takes two Vegas players with him into the corner. And then Connor Garland just throws the puck on net as he curls out of the corner. And Hughes Suter, scoring from where he scored so many goals this season, picks up the rebound off his skate, and then a backhand to beat Akira Schmid to make it 1-0 Vancouver.
Canucks took the lead, and then four unanswered by the Vegas Golden Knights. A 4-1 win for Vegas in the final game of the season, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. One final time as a postgame show for this season on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Thank you all for listening and participating as always. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in a moment as well. We'll hear from Quinn Hughes, and hopefully iMac will make it over as well before this evening is out.
He will. We've gotten confirmation.
Well, yeah. And listen, if we have to go late a few minutes, we will. It's the final game. We're here to do our thing. I just made picks.
I don't know.
I don't know.
No, we got you covered.
Yeah, a lot of reaction. There's obviously, like we mentioned, we heard a couple of people call in at the last call. Victor from North End being optimistic. Some people are optimistic. Others are pessimistic. Tanbeer isn't quite as optimistic. We've been going back and forth here looking at his text messages. It says he'll admit the Canucks have had terrible luck this season. Everything went wrong. That's why they look even more idiotic for not selling at the trade deadline, however, and says they're going to cater to Quinn Hughes before they even have a chance, before even they have a certainty he will stay long term. Trade their prospects and picks and Hughes will still say, I am out. Ultimately, it comes down to success. And the Canucks have two choices. It's one, either you do your best to win and try to keep Quinn Hughes long term, or you say, you know what, forget it, and you move on. Clearly, they're not willing to move on, at least not yet. We're a year away from that.
Yeah. And
so I think maybe you get to next year, and I don't think the Canucks are trading their best picks and prospects for – like third round pick for like
third line players,
for third liners, or for like, it's going to be younger players who are going to be here long term. So it's not going to be like you're selling your future for players who aren't going to be here. And ultimately, the best case scenario is, can you keep as many of those guys as possible to keep your team?
Yeah, I think that's part of the, you know, we saw the quote from Quinn in his conversation with Ian McIntyre last week or 2 weeks ago. And, you know, there was a recognition, it's like, you see some of the young guys coming through here. And as we've laid out, yeah, it's a huge summer. And I'm very interested to see like what path they take. Are they going to bet on themselves to say, in a season where everything doesn't go wrong, we're going to have a certain level of success here to show that this is trending in the right direction and we can hold on a couple of things? Or do they look at it and say, hey, we have this unique opportunity to go get this type of player? We're talking impact-style player.
Yeah.
Do we activate to go trade a first, trade a prospect? And again, I like some of the guys that are coming through here. Pending the player that you can go acquire, it's an interesting option as well. If you get a legit top-line player, like someone to the level of JT Miller, yeah, I'm okay sacrificing a bit of the future.
It all comes down to the caliber.
But it matters who the caliber is.
Yes.
If we're talking Alex Lafreniere, I'm a little less interested. If we're talking higher end, then I'm a little bit more interested. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see a scenario where you're still projecting a player to take this massive step. But if you get a bona fide, this guy we know is a point-of-game style player, I'm far more open to that.
Yes, I'm with you on it. Let's hit a couple more texts, then we'll get to the phone boards. Jenny in Kingston says, thanks for another season and all the LOLs. Sad it's coming to an end. Always enjoy tuning in. Moved out east last summer, and listening to all the post-game shows this season has made it feel like being at home. Maybe I should check out the Battle of Ontario games.
There you go.
Jenny in Kingston texting in. Yeah, I mean, playoff hockey. Watch as much of it as you can. And
it's fun.
And hope to see the Canucks there next season.
Some pretty good matchups, too.
Yeah, some not bad ones. One pretty good one between Colorado and the Dallas Stars. Mm-hmm. Anything else you see in the text inbox here before we go to the phone boards?
650, Hockey Mom and Gibson's. Make it make sense the way management has handled the Besser situation. Injuries, Petey, Miller. Just can't wrap my head around any of it so far this year. This one, Ames and North Van, what a sloggy year. Didn't have this on my bingo card. Didn't expect greatness, but this, first-time season ticket holder after 32 years, and what a letdown. It's still a diehard until the end.
Yeah, great stuff as always. Appreciate all the text messages and all the kind words, and looking forward to next season already, and bittersweet when a season comes to an end. And let's start things off on the forum boards in Montreal, where Nicholas has been waiting patiently to get on. Nicholas, thanks for hanging in there, bud. What do you have for us tonight?
No problem for the wait at all. Yeah, guys. Two quick points and a shout-out. First, I know that these last two games were meaningless standing-wise, but they provided us an obvious revealing glimpse as to why they are not in the playoffs. 0-5 against the Sharks. Worst team in the NHL, and it's not like they were playing their scrubs, you know, on those power plays. Tonight, something we saw on numerous occasions, it almost became comical. First, they failed to score on a power play at a critical moment, And then minutes later, sometimes even a minute later, they get scored on. You know, it turns the whole game around, or it puts a game out of reach. Okay, that's the first thing. And the second thing is for the Demko situation, which I've been listening to you guys closely, you know, broaching the subject and everything. Again, I've been following this team from the mid-70s, and you know they're hard and, you know, tough and dumb, dumb luck, bad and dumb luck. Mm-hmm. I go, when he wasn't ready in training camp, when he wasn't ready for the season even, I go, you know, what if we see him back in mid-February and healthy, you know, we'll take it, no questions asked. And we saw how it all played out. So my thing, I would say, is anyone realistically counting on him next season? Hey, I'd love to see him back, you know, in form. You'd have two great goalies, but you just wonder. And finally, the shout out to you guys. Ever since I was able to stream the show, I make sure to listen to you guys all the time. And I love that, by the way, I love that Derek McKee 2001 Sixers analogy finals. That was great. So that's it. That's it for tonight, and we'll talk to you guys next season then.
Hey, Nicholas, appreciate it very much, man. See, the Aaron McKee references. See, sometimes it's the random ones that resonate the most sometimes with certain listeners, yeah. Right? But we appreciate Nicholas for listening and participating.
From the other side of the coast.
Yeah,
the,
man.
Nation too. That's huge.
And I think that's the thing with Demko, obviously. I think Demko showed that he can overcome the injuries and be confident in his ability and show his peak. But has Demko yet proven he can stay healthy and play at his peak for a full season? That is something he has not yet done. It remains elusive.
Yeah. And Rick Tocchet acknowledging this week that already a structured summer plan for him as well. So he's got a big season ahead of him too, even though he's had fantastic years and, you know, put himself in a conversation for one of the best goalies in the league. But it comes back to that. It's not just can you do it once, it's can you do it consistently over 82, and that's something that's still eluded Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll take more of them and your phone calls. We'll hear from Quinn Hughes as well on the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment at Sat and Bick. And it's been a disappointing season. We're hoping for better things next year, but more to dissect as the show goes on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Out of the line for Marcus Pedersen. A centering pass blocked by Jack Eichel, who's after the puck, left wing into the Vancouver zone. Eichel, near circle, delays, holding onto the puck, backhand pass in front. What a save by Kevin Lankinen! He absolutely stoned Pavel Dorofeev off the beautiful backhand setup from Jack Eichel, and Lankinen keeps it a 1-0 game with 8:06 left in the second.
A very dangerous chance as Jack Eichel's coming down the left-hand side, does a little stop and start on Hronik, where he fakes inside, goes outside, and ends up setting up Dorofeev, who is a trailer on the play, but Kevin Lankinen making a save basically closes the space between his body and his left arm to make this save, and an excellent job from going right to left to make it. Kevin Lankinen standing strong thus far.
Kevin Lankinen, he was stellar through 40 minutes, only allowed one goal, but then had to leave the game due to an injury. Did not return, but he was on the ice afterwards. Gave his jersey off his back to a fan wearing his full gear, and the coach said he felt a pinch and they were being cautious with him, and I'm sure we'll hear from him over the next few days as well as the Canucks meet with the media to close out the season on Friday. And this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show for one final time this season on Sportsnet 650, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment at Sat and Bick on Sportsnet 650. Bick, and a lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. We appreciate all the kind words as well. It's been a lot of fun this season, despite it not being a great season. We always enjoy doing this. It's a blessing, whether the Canucks make the playoffs or not. And I woke up today feeling sad that this is the final game of the season. I know it's been a long year. I know it's been disappointing. I know it's been rough. And in some ways, it's good that it is coming to an end, but I always hate when a season comes to an end, and tonight it sunk in, and it wasn't the type of performance you wanted, but as people have been mentioning on the text inbox, Bobby Okanagan fitting the Canucks lose in a final game by blowing a lead in a game where a goalie gets injured and the Stars don't have a great performance that
on home
up
ice
year
on top of that,
but it says on to the next, you move on, you know. And yep. Like my man Victor texted in or called in, fellow Browns fan, and as Browns fans, we know that there's always next year. That's been our motto, always next year. So we always look forward to the next season. What else are you seeing on the text inbox?
Franco and Burnaby, wanted to find out from you on who would you go after this offseason. Would you keep Besser or Suter? P.U. Suter, 25-goal scorer, yeah. P.U. Suter, after a one tonight.
Man, like, it's all context. If you're keeping Suter, what impact winger can you get to offset it? And if you're keeping Besser, what center do you have to pair him with? If I had to choose, I might lean Suter for a smaller price and the versatility he brings.
Between the two?
Like, Suter can do more things for you, but Besser is the more impactful, better player if he finds a center you can pair him with.
The thing with Suter is I don't know if you can have a better value player in free agency than what he's going to provide.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would love Sam Bennett. It's going to cost you a lot of money. Yeah. And also, you're going to play him in a second-line role. Is that the spot that makes the most sense for him?
Yeah.
Then you're into Brock Nelson. I'm a little skeptical they'll be able to get Brock Nelson here, but solid player, but he can probably play second line, but he's also older. After that, it's Yanni Gourde. Now you're getting to pretty high age and prices. At that stage, like I'll just stick with P.U. Suter, but you're paying a premium now because he scored 25 to be your third line center. You still got to find a second line center, and now you've just taken away about potentially $4 million, maybe even more, of your 13 and change to go solve your second line center or top six center problem. It gets very, very tough really, really fast.
It does. There are a lot of challenges. Now, you know, this is the final post-game show. We, however, are going to have shows regularly Monday to Friday. Bix on People Show, 3 to 4. Lena and Josh are on Canucks Brunch from 11 to noon. And, you know, Canucks Central and myself and Reach from 4 to 6. And we're going to be talking about these things in depth throughout the course of the offseason. We can't do all of it here in this postgame show after a 4-1 loss against Vegas here. But there'll be a lot of dissecting and talking about these things in depth and what other options the Canucks do have available to them. I know Franco and Burnaby's asking us about those things as well. Which guy would you keep? And others are asking too. And we'll delve into that far more in this offseason. Again, 2.5 months to go until the draft, until the free agency, and just over 2 months and a week to the NHL draft. So a lot of time and a lot of content to cover all these things as time goes on. Let's go to the phone boards and take a call here as well, and we'll start things off in Gibson's, where we have Duncan on the line. Duncan, thanks for calling in, bud. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Oh, hey, Sat. Long-time texter, first-time caller.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm really... It's great. I think the season, as bizarre as it was, it's like the election in the United States. But I've been a fan since I was 10 years old. You know, I wanted Gilbert Perreault over Dale Talon. And every year. How long has it been now? 55 years?
Yeah, 55 years.
So I'm getting to the point where I might not live to actually, you know, see a Stanley Cup. You know what I mean? Like, it's, oh, my God. So I want Rick Tocchet to stay next year. I don't want him to get wooed by Philadelphia, where they really want him to go. You know? I hope that Rick Tocchet stays, because that'll just create some stability and not more confusion, you know? But I know he's probably tempted to go to Philadelphia with his connections there, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you. Hey, Duncan, appreciate the call, appreciate your thoughts, and I really hope the Canucks do win a Stanley Cup here in 55 years. It'll be 56 next year. I'm not sure if next year is the year, but can you get closer next season, at least a lot closer than you were this year, with the Canucks missing out on the postseason? All right, appreciate everybody texting in and calling in. We were going to get to Quinn Hughes, but we'll do one better, because the man we call the triple threat, you see him on TV, you watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre, very early here on the postgame show.
Yes, the closer is coming in around the sixth inning. I don't know if I can make it to the bottom of the hour, but it's not true that I'm one better than Quinn Hughes. Nobody's better than Quinn Hughes. Although he wasn't very loquacious post-game.
No, I think frustrated.
As he hasn't been all year.
Yeah.
You know, this is really...
He's saving it for Friday.
Yeah. Well, maybe he saved it for me last week. I had a great interview with him last week. But I know that this season has worn on a lot of people in this organization. And certainly the captain and the coach, Rick Tocchet, it's been draining on them. I think everybody is... Much as they'd love to be getting ready for a first-round playoff series, as we all would love to be covering this team in the playoffs, I think a bunch of them need to just unplug and try and recharge, because they are going to need to have a better summer this year than they did last year as a group in order to have a better season than they did this season.
It just feels like so much carnage throughout the course of the year, and you know, like, there'll be plenty of time. I'm sure you'll have a autopsy of the season coming out here.
Postmortem is coming up
in the next couple of days. But just at first blush, like, what do you think about for this season?
Well, it got off to I wouldn't say a poor start, because the team actually had that 7-1-1 stretch early on. But it got off to an unexpected start, an uneven start. There were plot twists right away.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they never found their footing as a team. Mm-hmm. And certainly once, you know, Besser in succession, quick succession, Besser got hurt. And, of course, Demko was already hurt. But Besser got hurt. JT Miller took his leave, and Philip Ronick got hurt, all in succession, and the team never really recovered. They were never able to string together, you know, two good weeks or a winning streak that would allow them to get some breathing room, because the whole season was played with a sense of desperation, right? And that's how it is when you're living on the cut line and you're in the wild card race mosh pit. I think it's actually a credit to them, and certainly it is to Tocchet, that they stayed in the race as long as they did with all the key injuries that they had. But in the end, there was just the adversity and the challenges, and a lot of it self-imposed, just reached a critical mass.
Yeah.
And it was a matter of how long the team could withstand it before they collapsed. And you know, they made it to the second to last week of the season, but man, that's no victory, right? Like when you've coming off a 109-point season and you were one win away from the conference final, and you're talking about being better, which means it's actually challenging for a Stanley Cup. The franchise is first. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah.
The Canucks have never won one. Vegas, the team we saw tonight, they're going for their second already.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you come into the season with the expectations that they had and the ability, like the legitimate ability that they had they gotten their team together and got their game together, to be out now is bitterly disappointing. We'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, and I know, you know, there's a lot of talk about where the blame gets assigned, and we'll delve into a lot of that. And there's a lot to go around, you know, and there are a lot of things that happen out of their control. There are a lot of things that happen in their control, and there is lots that we can kind of point to. But I know we've seen a lot of different types of years, and I know we can sit here and say, well, there's never been a season as dramatic as this, which would be a lie. In the 55-year history of this team,
there's been one that had more drama than this, in my mind.
Which year are you thinking about for that one?
The Keenan-Brian Burke year.
That one, too.
Certainly the calendar year, or the 12 months that Keenan was here. There was so much
drama. What were you thinking of?
I was thinking of that as one of them. I was also thinking about the year after the lockout with Bertuzzi, that a whole year. And, you know, news stories about why he's sitting at the end of the bench and things like that.
But that was just sort of one.
Yeah, but then they missed the playoffs, had all the injuries, too. Remember, like, everyone got hurt. They traded all the draft picks at the deadline and still missed the playoffs at the end.
But they didn't trade the Sedins.
No, they didn't.
Which is, you know, there was an element in the organization that wanted that.
Yeah, they kept Anson Carter and then didn't keep him at beyond the season. Yeah. But anyways, my point being,
I'm going to say that doesn't even come close.
Maybe not quite.
This season.
But yes.
But finish been a lot your of, thought. I keep interrupting.
My point is, it was been a very – I wouldn't say it's been the most dramatic season, but it's been a very dramatic season. And I would imagine next year is going to be more quiet. But at the same time, unless they succeed –
That's a very hopeful
right.
thought.
But here's the thing. Like, the only way it's going to be more quiet is if they win.
Yeah.
Because if they have any sort of hiccups, the entire conversation is going to be about, well, when do you trade Quinn Hughes then?
Yeah, I think I think the key is between now and then, they have to have a plan, and they need to express that plan so everybody understands exactly what it is they're trying to achieve, and probably more importantly, how they plan to achieve it. I mean, what do they plan to achieve? They plan to be a lot better next year than they were this year. They hope that they're going to be in a position where they're close enough to being able to challenge again for something that Quinn will want to stay. But how are you going to do that? And right now, yeah. that's the huge mystery going into the offseason. We don't even know who the coach is going to be.
I was just going to ask. You asked him about that.
I mean, it starts there. We don't know what's going to happen with their supposed best forward who has played like,
yeah.
you know, a second-line center since he signed the richest contract in team history and was at sort of the root of a lot of their problems this year. Now,
yeah.
I agree with you. You know, people want to find blame, but it's not one thing. It's a lot of things. But I'll say how that, you know, when I said the team never had its footing, it never got off to the start that was planned. And a lot of that has to do with Demko's injury from the summer and Pettersson's conditioning and then his performance early in the season.
Yeah.
And you know, there's lots more than that. I'm not saying that was the blame, but that was the start of it. That's how they kind of false started, you know, got up off the ground, had that one brief, 7-1-1, 9
yeah.
games. So like 3 weeks. They had 3 weeks that were good.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And then the injuries hit. So, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff I think they need to figure out. And I think this is part of the reason why Rick Tocchet hasn't engaged to this point in negotiations to get there's been some negotiations, but why he's been unwilling to this point to actually make a decision and say, yes, I'll re-up for this. Because he wants to know what Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford plan to do about the deficiencies in the lineup, about the culture, about, you know, players on the team that need to be better. And Pettersson certainly is one of those, the original Pettersson I'm talking about. But they need to sort this stuff out and
yeah.
have a firm idea how they're going to get from A to B. And I think if they have a firm idea and people understand how they're trying to get there, I think next season can be, I don't know about quieter. I don't know that it's ever going to be quiet in this market, but certainly there can be less drama and less stress and less angst about what the team is doing once they have that plan set and people understand what it is they're trying to do.
Those are linked for you too, as well as getting the public on board with what a plan is. Because they change the plan after JT gets traded, but also for the coach's timeline here, just to make sure everyone's on the same page again.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, and here's the thing: when people speculate about Tocchet going to Philadelphia or pining to go to Philadelphia for a lot of money,
we have people texting and telling us that we're idiots for not confronting the reality that he's already decided to go to Philly and he's not coming back to Vancouver.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's decided to go to Philly, but that's not to say that he wouldn't end up there.
Yeah.
If he's not coaching here, I mean, that's a logical
yes.
spot. But I think what a tremendous amount of people overlook in this situation. Rick Tocchet is a 60-year-old coach who suffered through a couple of almost untenable situations. In fact, they were untenable because he left both.
Yeah.
You know, in Tampa and Arizona. And in Arizona, he was tasked with overseeing this rebuild and building around a bunch of young players. And Utah's still trying to get there. They're
yeah.
still, and granted, their ownership in Arizona was so poor, it's hard to judge like the franchise and say that, well, that's been a colossal failure, this rebuild.
but they're still trying to make the playoffs. I don't think Rick Tocchet, at age 60, having got within a win of a conference final, having never won a Stanley Cup as a coach, as a head coach, sorry, did as an assistant in Pittsburgh, I don't know that it's that appealing for him, this idea of taking on a rebuild and waiting for 3 or 4 or 5 years to be in a position with that team that he was here last year and could be again next year if the right moves are made. That doesn't mean he's not going to Philadelphia. Yeah. Certainly he's going to be in demand in a lot of places if things don't get worked out here in Vancouver. And of course, the Canucks still have the wild card on this. They have the club option. So if they're determined to dig in, they can try to force Tocchet's hand. But as I've said before, and Tocchet mentioned it post-game tonight, is his relationship with Patrick Colvin. Obviously, that relationship goes for Jim Rutherford as well from their time together in Pittsburgh. I can't really see them forcing him to coach here or forcing him to quit and not coach anywhere if they can't work out an extension. But I think Tocchet's got a lot of questions before he agrees to that extension.
I agree with that, and that's the sentiment I've gotten to, that they're going to do everything they can, and they've flexed their muscles to tell the league, stay away. But ultimately, if he decides he doesn't want to come back, they'll let him go, and we'll see if it gets to that. I do think, though, like the solution here for Tocchet, the simple one is sign a 2-year extension, line yourself up with Quinn Hughes, and by the end of next season, you're going to have a pretty good idea where this is going, right? And I think then, because you do the 2-year thing, it's essentially just buying yourself next year. And even for Quinn, it is about next year, because you can't go into the final year of Quinn's contract not knowing what you're going to do with the most important player in franchise history. You can't take that risk. At least I don't think you can, right? So a 2-year deal just kicks the can down the road 1 year, and I think it gives them an easy, you know, out here. And maybe it's a 2-year plus an option to call it a 3-year deal, but that's the way I would look at it. And
I don't know if that's really enough to satisfy Tocchet. I think if he's going to commit, and this is just me spitballing here because he hasn't said anything to me about what his plans are, but if he's going to recommit because he has the assurances from Alvin and Rutherford that they're going to do certain things and that they're still aligned, and that's been, we saw how beneficial that was with this regime when we finally had the coaching department aligned with management. Now they just need to make sure that they're realigned, that they're still on the same page. And if Tocchet recommits, I don't know what's in it for him just to do a 2-year deal with having, you know, come here, lured out of the broadcast booth on basically a 3.5-year deal just to go another 2. I think you may as well try and do it longer than that. And I would say if you're trying to convince Quinn to stay, I don't think it's a bad thing if you can say, look, he's going to be your coach. And not just for next season. He's going to be here, and we'd like you to be here too.
But here the reason you mentioned so eloquently that the two situations he was in prior, and he doesn't want to be in a rebuild. You commit long-term and Quinn leaves, you're in a rebuild. And I'm just wondering, you know, how much can you guarantee a guy when you don't know if Quinn's going to be here or not? I don't think you can.
I don't think you can say that, Sad. I don't think you can say if Quinn's not here. I mean, if Quinn leaves this summer, you're probably rebuilding. But who knows what the team looks like 2 years from now. You know, they already have some young players on their way. They're not going to have a whole lot of older pieces, depending on, like, if Brock goes. You know, Tyler Myers has got 2 more years. They just re-signed Pettersson. They've got Roenick. Like, those are the two. Thatcher Demko's up. Kevin Lankinen's a 4-year deal. It's very manageable. There's not going to be a whole lot if you're trying to rebuild. They're not going to have a whole lot of older pieces to sell off. So fair. I think they're probably going more likely to retool as they've been trying to do, to just try and be better year by year if they can.
Just hard, but losing one of the best players in the league
and getting
better.
Yeah, right? Of course it is. And it'll be devastating, I think, to the psyche for the organization. It'll be devastating in Canucks Nation. He's the best player that this franchise has ever had, and one of the most exciting, and he's looks like he's turning into a great captain as well as a tremendous player, the first Norris Trophy winner in franchise history. So there's no way to spin him leaving as anything but devastating, but I'm not sure that it automatically means the team will rebuild.
You mentioned Brock, and you had a great question for him in the morning, and just what this day kind of encapsulated for him and also what it means for the future here.
Yeah, I'm sure it was far more difficult for him than he let on this morning.
Yeah.
But it's interesting as well that he was emphasizing, as he did tell me last week when I spoke to him briefly, but, you know, my bad for probably not making that point in the brief story I had on Brock as part of a notebook last week. But he did emphasize today that it's not for certain that the door is closed. Now, I'm saying it looks pretty bleak, right?
And, I'm just thinking of Animal House. Over?
Yeah.
Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Yeah. Someone's going to text it and say, yeah. Germans didn't, yes, we know.
I'm impressed with anybody who knows movies that I know.
Yeah.
So, because I'm so old now.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's Animal House.
Great movie.
Yeah. I noticed, looking to see if the Blue Jays were playing a day game today, but they weren't. Meatballs. Early Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Feed Spaz. Yeah. He's hot. And a lot of stuff that would be inappropriate now about, you know, it's summer camp. Anyways, Brock was kind of emphasizing that the door hasn't closed yet. Mm-hmm. And if it's true, and Elliot Friedman and others have reported, I think you've reported the 5-year offer. So if that's true, I mean, does 6 years get a deal done?
Yeah.
Or does it have to be 7 or 8?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's not too late, but certainly, the tea leaves are pretty clear on this, and especially around the trade deadline, what happened, that he was shopped, but, you know, Alvin was pretty blunt about the level of interest in him, which I think was completely accurate. I don't believe that they had a first round pick on the table for him, but it was still sort of the truth is painful kind of moment that he was saying that about Brock Besser, and I don't think that helped things. And, you know, as Besser told me, he's even shutting off his agent right now because he doesn't want to hear about it and worry about it and be distracted by it anymore. Well, now he can be distracted by it again because he's played his final game. It was a very quiet night for him. It would have been nice somehow had there been an opportunity, and I'm sure had there been a moment in the game, had he scored, or, you know, had they put the cameras on him during the TV timeout, there would have been a chance to have sort of an expression of the love that clearly this fan base has for him. He has a connection. I think people have appreciated not just that he's been a good player, if not a superstar, or not a superstar, but been a good player for him, a good top six contributor. I think people have appreciated what he's been through on a personal level and how open and candid he has been about that, because in the end, what they do on the ice is one of the least relatable things to everybody watching them. But if you lose a loved one or you struggle through challenges, people can relate to that and they can sympathize with that. And I think there is a lot of love in this market for Brock. And certainly, as far as people I've covered, I mean, there's been a lot of great guys on this team, especially guys in leadership roles. But Brock is one of my favorite people on the team. There, I'll share a little background story that I wasn't privy to, but I was told about it, that Connor Garland and Quinn Hughes were arguing about which one of them I liked better. And so I said, actually, I like Brock better than you. I have a lot of respect and time for him, and I would love it for this organization from a selfish standpoint just to be able to continue to talk to him and have that kind of candid relationship with him where, you know, he can tell me how he feels about things and I can write stories other than what a guy does on the ice. I hope that they get it sorted out, but there hasn't been much to feel encouraged about all along this season in those negotiations in that situation.
Yeah, and we'll see what if anything changes last minute, because the MO with this organization, I know some people have a hard time reconciling the fact that they had a price for him at the deadline and they were willing to trade him, and then why would you keep a guy you're willing to trade? Well, they set a price, it wasn't met, and maybe that was a preferred outcome. We get this price, that's option one. But there is an option B, they would like to keep him if they can get him at the number that is preferable for them. Now, if they don't get to that number, then they'll walk the guy off. But this happened with JT too, because it looked like they were far off, and then one phone call changed things. So I think...
Or maybe two.
Or two.
One to Bo.
One, right.
And one to JT.
But it was the same situation. You know, they were willing to trade both guys. It depended on what price you got and what number you were able to sign him with. And I think just because Brock wasn't traded doesn't mean that they don't have an interest in keeping him. I think there's genuine interest. I just think that number is – the term is going to be a big thing. I think Brock wants 7-8. The team doesn't want to go above 5. Can both hold their noses and go to 6? I think that's what I wonder about.
Well, I think if there's an offer of any kind, then there's genuine interest. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not making an offer –
Some performative offer.
Yeah, okay. I don't think they're making an offer for him to say no so that they can save face. Say, see, yeah. He made an offer. I mean, if you're willing to go 5 years at, say, $8 million or whatever the number was, that's a serious commitment. One thing to remember, though, about this situation, you know, Brock has done two bridge deals, right, and completely sensible from both sides. I don't think it was, you know, I don't think the team ended up with a huge advantage over him because they did two bridge deals instead of a long-term deal. Mm-hmm. But he's had two bridge deals, and so now he's looking for that long-term deal, which is understandable. But from the Canucks standpoint, if you're not comfortable with the term and you don't feel like you're getting a significant discount and you're just paying market rate, then you may... That's a lot of money, and you can devote that to somebody else at market rate. You know, it's different if you feel like you're saving money, you're getting a break either in term or in money. So, oh yeah, you better take advantage of that opportunity, because once he's gone, that opportunity's gone. You're not going to get that from somebody on July 1st, mm-hmm. who's just looking typically for the most money he can get. But if they don't feel like they're getting a discount or they're getting the term or the numbers that they think he warrants, well, they can apply that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So because I know the argument, and it makes sense in a lot of ways, that if you're struggling for offense, well, keep this guy. Like, how's your offense going to get better if Brock Besser leaves? Well, if you feel like you're paying full market value, well, maybe you can apply that and get that offense from somebody else.
Right.
But we know that the free agent group is pretty thin, as it typically is, because teams typically re-sign players like Brock Besser before they become UFAs.
Well, no playoffs this year, so that means there's more time to kill between now and July 1st and free agency. So Basketball Phil says, a weekly segment on The People Show, Movies with IMAC.
Be great.
Maybe not a bad idea. Maybe not a bad idea for content. But we'll use this moment to thank you, Ian, for all your contributions to the postgame show over the course of the season. A lot of ups and downs, but we've always enjoyed having you on. I know all our listeners have as well. So thank you for all your contributions. And we hope for the contributions, hard to imagine they can get better, but perhaps. But we look forward to them continuing next season.
Well, often, and don't let this go to your head, but often this is the best part of my day, you know, my work day, when I come on here for the final. Usually it's 15 minutes. Yeah. I figured I'd honor you with 25 minutes tonight. But it's nice to chat, and the conversation is always lively. And I'm, as you've noticed, usually a little loopy by the time I get here, because I've pounded out 1,000 words for digital. I've been to the morning skate. I watched through the game. I've done the interviews. And there's kind of a relief that part of the workday is done. So I come over here and, do whatever this is that I'm doing right now.
We get IMAC unfiltered pretty much at this stage. More or less.
Yeah, more or less.
More or less. I mean, there is a filter because, obviously.
More or less. Yes, if the show goes after midnight,
then,
like it does in the playoffs, then look out. Then, all bets.
IMAC sifted. Yeah. Yes.
iMac for adults only.
Yeah. iMac after dark. It gets dangerous. But, yeah, great stuff as always. I can't wait to read your latest on sportsnet.ca and all the contributions you will continue to make throughout the course of this offseason as well. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you guys. I appreciate everybody listening to all these games and all these issues that we talk through. And, you know, no matter whether the ride is like a roller coaster or it's smooth, it's always got people's interest, and I'm happy that we can talk about it together.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ian. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to Bick Nazar, as always. We'll see you on the People Show.
Yeah.
Special thanks to Lena Sitagian. Great job, as always. You can listen to her on Canucks Brunch. Fast Eddie Gregory holding it down for the course of the season. Great stuff, as always. And all of you for listening, participating, being part of the show. You make it very special. This is a dream job for us. We're very sad the season is over, but speaking for the both of us, Bick, you can add to it as well, but can't wait to get back at it. And we pine for the night that we get to call a Stanley Cup victory for you guys post-game, and we hope that journey continues next season.
Yeah, it's a blast. We had so much fun, obviously, last year, and you want to see it carry over, but these 82 have been a struggle at times to watch, but not to cover, and the engagement we get from people is always overwhelming, and it is very satisfying. So thank you for all the contributions from everyone.
Yeah, just sad that it's going to be a longer postseason, off-season, but we look forward to getting back at it. But don't be a stranger. We'll be back on our normal shows, back at it tomorrow on Sportsnet 615. It starts with the morning show, Halford and Brough, 6 a.m. tomorrow. Thank you all for listening, participating on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.